Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Save up to $450 on a Gibson Les Paul Studio Deluxe, up to $900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad Pro 4, or save up to 20% on other select Gibson guitars. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pistons. You may be listening on iTunes or Audio Boom, or you might be listening and watching live on Periscope right now. I'm your host, Duncan Smith. You can follow me on Twitter, if you don't already, at DuncanSmithNBA, and you can find my work on PistonPowered.com. As we all know, KCP is no longer a Piston. He signed a one-year deal worth $18 million with the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, I think that one week ago from right now, we would all agree that KCP signing a deal with the Lakers is one of the least likely things that could have developed from this ordeal that the Pistons and KCP and Clutch Sports kind of collectively went through recently. I think about a week ago we would have all figured that somehow or another they're just going to make it work and KCP will return to the fold and the lineup, the roster itself, will not really undergo much turnover. And then I think it was Friday morning, Marcus Morris got traded to the Boston Celtics for Avery Bradley, and the world kind of changed for the Pistons and for the Boston Celtics as well. I do want to talk a little bit about how things went sideways for KCP. I think that it was expected that he would get his money from the Pistons, and there were, in my opinion, there were a series of things that worked out not as planned, essentially. And I think that ended up costing KCP some money and costing him some security down the road in the form of years. So we'll take a look here. I wrote out a Twitter thread about sort of my interpretation of where things went ugly for KCP and for Clutch Sports. So this, in my opinion, goes all the way back to June 18th when Paul George told the Pacers that he's opting out after next season. He expressed an interest in going to the Lakers. We all know he's always wanted to go to the Lakers. That's his place. If he can't be on a winner, he might as well go home, more or less, and play for his hometown team. So, we all prioritize different things. If that's what gets him going, so be it. That's cool. Obviously this caught the Lakers' attention. And another thing that caught the Lakers' attention was the fact, the rumors that LeBron might head west after his contract this season ends with the self-immolating Cavaliers. I used that word in my Twitter thread, and I kind of like that description, as the Cavaliers are not exactly forming a super team that can hang with the Warriors right now. They've struggled to maintain any kind of momentum that they had last year. Rumors have it that LeBron is interested in going to Los Angeles, whether it be the Clippers or the Lakers, after his contract ends. Even if there's a 10% chance, you can't blame the Lakers for thinking ahead. So in order to get ahead of their cap space issues for next offseason, they decided that they needed to make a move and get rid of a big contract. So the one that they decided to get rid of was Timofey Mozgov. The Lakers traded him and D'Angelo Russell to the Brooklyn Nets for Brooke Lopez and a late first-round pick. I believe it was the 27th overall pick. That went back to the Lakers. So this move should have immediately been a big red flag to Clutch Sports and to KCP as well. Russell was repurposed really as an off guard by the Lakers, and by all accounts, the plan is also to play him off ball with the Nets. They like their backcourt now with Jeremy Lin and with Russell. Both guys can handle the ball. Both guys can play off the ball. It's a good sort of reciprocal backcourt. It's young. Jeremy Lin has a player option next year, but whether he opts in or opts out, the Nets probably won't mind having the additional flexibility from a salary perspective. And if he opts in, that's cool. They still have Jeremy Lin on a reasonable contract. So the Nets now have a backcourt they like, and naturally less inclination to max KCP, which is probably what it would take to get him out from under the Pistons' clutches. So that was June 20th that the D'Angelo Russell trade went down. The next day, June 21st, the day before the draft, the NBA announced that the salary cap was dropping from a projected $101 million for the coming season to just $99 million. So, you know, it's a small difference, but it's a number that tightens the purse strings for all except for the most cap-rich teams, essentially. All but the teams that have the most to spend that had, like, max plus money kind of thing. So it tightens everything just a little bit. And if you tighten everything just a little bit, you have, like, an impact of a fairly negative overall impact on the kind of splashing around money that a lot of teams have. So the next step that came in this process was the Pistons hard capping themselves. They signed Langston Galloway for more than the $5.2 million taxpayers mid-level exception. They ended up signing him for about 6 2/3 million for this coming season. So they're hard capped and they have to cut salary to match. If a team was to max the Piston, to max KCP, in order to match, they'd have to cut about $7 million of salary. So that would mean, like, Boban and another contract, for example, or it would mean John Luehr would get the job done, and an additional $3 million of space or so. So, you know, it was going to be sort of an ugly process now in order to pay KCP the max if that was going to be the case. The next domino to fall was the Sixers signing J.J. Redick to a one-year $23 million deal. You know, the Sixers were probably not big players in the KCP market, but you take one team out with money to spend, and that's a little bit less leverage that KCP and his camp have. There's fewer interested teams. The Pistons obviously refuse to bid against themselves, and there's just less money out there than KCP's camp expected. There is less money to begin with than was planned, and now as, like, teams just sort of drop off by the wayside, you know, the Nets are less motivated. They've shifted from an emphasis to KCP probably back around March to making Otto Porter the first guy that they fired max money at. So, you know, teams are refocusing a little bit, and then Gordon Hayward signs for the max with the Boston Celtics on July 4th. The Celtics needed to cut about $3 million in space to consummate the deal, and the contract that I thought was the least likely to be moved from a value perspective, because, like, Marcus Morris has been highly valuable on his contract. You know, I had probably a lower opinion than many on Morris's contributions to the Pistons, but there's no doubt that that his contract is one of the best values in the NBA. So that's one that I expected would be very unlikely to get moved. That was the one that the Celtics needed. They needed to clear about $3 million in space, and they cleared 3.8 or so, I think. So they move Morris, they get Avery Bradley. He represents a positional upgrade, and now suddenly KCP becomes expendable, and I think what most people considered being the least likely of all options, that being KCP walking for nothing, that's the one that takes place. So in the end, KCP walks for nothing, thanks to an unexpected series of events, primarily surrounding the Pacers, the Lakers, the Brooklyn Nets, the Boston Celtics, and the reduced salary cap. You know, it was a very unexpected turn, a number of unexpected turns that ended up bringing us to the current situation now, where we've got KCP in Los Angeles taking pictures with Rich Paul and Rob Hlinka. Now he's a Laker. You know, we've seen him with his Lakers one jersey, which is really trippy. So, you know, in a final nod to the chaos of the past, really only 3.5 weeks. It seems like it's been much longer than that. So in a final nod to this chaos, the Lakers now have space because they moved Mozgov's contract, and they have a positional need because they traded D'Angelo Russell. So, you know, if there's any way for this to come full circle, why not the Lakers? So, in the end, the Lakers are the team that pays Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And, it was a very unexpected series of events in a lot of ways. Avery Bradley was announced to the media and to the team this afternoon at by the Pistons. Apparently, according to, I think it was Rod Beard, Bradley and his wife just had their third kid, so he flew in today and then flew right back out. So, if you check his timeline, he's got a lot of quotes, and Bradley said all the right things. He talked about bringing a different kind of attitude, a nasty kind of attitude to the Pistons' defense. He talked about being somebody who can sort of help with developing better habits on this team that certainly seemed to have poor habits to some degree last year, particularly towards the end of the season when things just deteriorated across the board. So he said all the right things. He said and indicated and appeared to be happy to be in Detroit. I think he's probably going to be fine wherever he ends up going, whether it be staying in Boston or being traded to the Pistons or a contender or what have you. So he's now a Piston. KCP is a Laker, and it's a stranger world now than the one we were in a week ago. Somebody in chat asked my projected starting lineup for the Pistons, and right now that's Reggie, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris at the 3, John Lure at the 4, and Andre Drummond at the center. Ibby Lockdown in chat says Reggie Bradley, Johnson at the 3, Tobias at the 4, and Andre Drummond at center. And I think that those are really the only two lineups that make sense to start. And I feel like my lineup is probably going to be the one that starts the season. And as the season progresses, Ibby Lockdown's suggested lineup with Stanley Johnson at the 3 and Tobias Harris at the 4 will probably be how that shakes down.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings, much more. Geico's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with Geico, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than Geico. More power to you. Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Speaking of Reggie Jackson, who is going to benefit significantly from Avery Bradley's defense alongside him. A couple days ago we had rumor of Reggie Jackson being involved in trade discussions with the New Orleans Pelicans. The rumor was Reggie going to the Pelicans in exchange for Alexis Ejinsa, Etuan Moore, and possibly, it was always expressed as possibly, Quincy Pondexter. It's a deal that would save the Pistons basically no money for the next two seasons. And in 2019-2020, they would have about $9 million in savings. Worth noting that that's also the season that Josh Smith's $5.3 million comes off the books. So, come 2020, they'd have, or 2019, I suppose, they would have, it would be the end of the 2019-2020 season. So it would be the summer of 2020. So 3 years down the road, it'd be locked down from what you heard from Stan today. No way he's getting traded this offseason. I don't think there's any real possibility that Reggie gets traded. I would be quite astonished for a lot of reasons that I've gotten into before and we'll probably get into later, maybe even tonight. So I do have a theory on this trade. I think this trade idea was entirely a concoction of the New Orleans Pelicans front office. The reason I think this is Michael Scotto, who tweeted out the original rumor, if Reggie gets traded, will I eat my words? No, I'm going to leave that to Sham Sham God. And I'm pretty sure that he owes us that one more. He got me sidetracked there. But yeah, this to me seems very much like an idea come up with by the Pelicans. The biggest reason for that is that Scotto tweeted today, after tweeting the initial rumor a couple days ago, that talks on Reggie Jackson had slowed down and sort of reached an impasse, but now the Pelicans were focusing on Rajon Rondo. So this to me seems like the Pelicans are in the market for a point guard. They are shopping around. They are trying to get a point guard. Reggie Jackson was, if not the first option they sought out, certainly the first option we have heard of that they had sought out. So talk stalled because the Pistons weren't interested. The package didn't appeal to them. And now the Pelicans signal their interest in moving on because they're after Rajon Rondo. You know, if the Pistons had brought up these talks and they had offered Reggie Jackson for, you know, I don't want to call them spare parts, but not exactly a package that inspires a whole lot of excitement when you're sending away your starting point guard. And if healthy, I still maintain probably your best player. You know, it's for all indications are that this would be much more something more. It would be something that interests the Pelicans significantly more. The only reason that the Pistons would have any kind of interest in this is if they decide that Reggie Jackson's knee is just shot, and I think that that is probably something they would not be determining. The early middle stages of July, you know, there is rehab to go, and the most important element of rehab when it comes to knee tendonitis, as Sham Sham God says, Shimmy Mohio on Piston Powered and on Twitter, as he has indicated with his health and medical background, rest and staying off it is the best thing that he can do in this offseason right now. And so it's just too soon, too early, for the Pistons to be throwing the towel. Reggie was at the introduction for Avery Bradley today. Keith Langlois tweeted out a picture of him and Stan talking and laughing. I guess it was the practice facility. So he's around. Whether I don't imagine that he's re-engaged in basketball activities yet, but if he hasn't, you know, so be it. If he doesn't until training camp, that'd be cool, as far as I'm concerned. So I think that's where we're at with Reggie Jackson, and again, I would be quite surprised if any trade, especially involving that particular package, came into being. So I'll throw the ball to your court, guys. See if you have any questions in chat here, and if so, we'll go a little longer, and if not, we'll wrap up. AB Lockdown has Cavs 1, Celtics 2, Wizards 3, Raptors 4, 5 Pistons, 6 Bucks, 7 Heat, 8 Sixers, with a healthy Reggie. I think that's fine. I think somewhere in the 4 to 6 range, if Reggie's healthy, is fine. I still think they could probably make the playoffs, even if Reggie was not right, even if he was still in his hindered, unexplosive state. I also think that he might have an ability to adjust his play style over the course of this off season. I compared it often last year to like a fastball pitcher losing his velocity. You know, it doesn't mean that a guy that has a fastball, that has relied on his fastball for the majority of his career, it doesn't mean that he can't figure out how to make things work. It just means he can't rely on the fastball anymore. He has to find other ways to get it done. And for a guy who utilizes his explosiveness like Reggie did 2 years ago and previously in his career, I think it's something that's going to take him some time. So I think that even a broken Reggie, you know, if we want to call him that, even a hindered Reggie from last year, with some time and some experience and sort of like a repurposing of how he approaches the game, I think that he still has some use. I mean, he had his best three-point shooting season last year. He was decent as a jump shooter from pretty much everywhere. It was really just like defensively, obviously, he was a disaster. All of his explosive metrics, all of his layups, his close to the rim, close to the basket numbers were all quite dreadful. He was one of the worst players in the NBA within like 3 feet, which, you know, that I think that if you are accustomed to being able to jump over people and jump through people and go through people and explode by people, when you can't do that anymore, it makes sense that you just don't have quite the same elevation and boost to get up to the rim like you once could. So, you know, I think he's a guy who is better with his explosiveness, but there are things that that he can bring to the table even without being the Reggie of old. So, John Doe with some numbers asks if I've heard anything on Reggie's health. It's something I just talked about a minute ago, but there is really no indication, and there's probably no reason that the Pistons would say anything good or bad, but at this point I think that no news is good news, and the longer he goes without basketball activities, I think probably the better, because rest and relaxation, staying off his knee, would be best. Maybe lockdown says, Reggie said it's 100% fine. You know, that doesn't mean anything, I don't think. I think Reggie is probably always going to say that it's 100% fine. I don't fault him for that, but I'm skeptical that that Reggie saying it's 100% fine actually means that it is fine. It may be, but I don't take much from Reggie saying that. I think that he's going to do whatever he can to, you know, if nothing else, manifest that it is fine. So, if he stays healthy and you're with your witchcraft sim, it's fine, says Ben from Detroit Bad Boys. Funny story. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but about a week before training camp last year, maybe 2 weeks before training camp started last year, I did a piece for Piston Powered where I ran 10 simulations to get sort of an aggregate idea of what we could expect from the Pistons for last season. I believe in 6 of the 10 simulations, at least one player missed between 20 and 50 games due to knee tendonitis specifically. Reggie twice, Andre Drummond once, and I think Tobias Harris 3 times. So about a week later, Reggie was diagnosed with knee tendonitis. So essentially, I, Duncan Smith, at Duncan Smith NBA on Twitter, I am almost certainly responsible for the fact that the Pistons missed the playoffs and had a dreadful season pretty much across the board. So you can send your hate mail to me, because I did it. It's my fault. If we don't make the playoffs, how likely is it that Andre Drummond gets traded? I think if the Pistons don't make the playoffs in this Eastern Conference, it is a disaster and everybody is gone. That may or may not extend to the coach and president of basketball operations, but I think the players, I think that the roster will be completely overhauled if the Pistons don't make the playoffs this season. This is really like a put up or shut up season. Like this is it, essentially. This is There's no more room for excuses. There's no more room for our best player was injured and was terrible all year long. This is now a team that should be able to function with one reduced player on the roster. Reggie showed that last year his impact was significant, and it's still significant. But with the addition of guys like Langston Galloway, who was like a clear upgrade over, Darren Hilliard, who was probably the only true shooting guard that played in relief of KCP. Stanley Johnson was played out of position at the shooting guard spot all year last year. There's been upgrades in reserve spots and third string spots pretty much across the board. If any one guy goes down, the Pistons should be able to roll out an X man up without the tremendously overwhelming drop off that they had last season when Reggie missed 30 games and everything went straight to hell. There shouldn't be such a tremendous drop off this year if one guy goes down. Somebody asked something about Luke Kennard. I think it was about his minutes. I keep thinking it's going to be somewhere in the... I've kind of vacillated between 15 and 18 and 18 to 20 minutes. It really sounds like Stan is convinced that that Kennard is going to play. The Pistons left Orlando feeling as though he's more likely to be able to play than they entered Orlando. Luke Kennard really turned some heads in the organization, turned a Stan Van Gundy's head in particular, which is the most important head to turn on this team. While my early inclination is 15 to 20 minutes, we could find Kennard getting more than that. Maybe not much more. He's not playing 30 minutes a game next year. But there may be times when he does get a decent 50% or more of a given game's minutes on the floor. I think the first couple games of the season are going to be interesting. Now with Reggie Bullock missing the first five games, we'll see how the Pistons want to rotate around their backup and third string small forward and shooting guard spots. It's not going to be quite as interesting as things would have been if KCP came back and Luke Kennard became your backup shooting guard by default behind Langston Galloway. Because the first two games of the season, KCP is going to be suspended for his March DUI, but nonetheless, the Pistons' newfound depth is going to be tested slightly. AD Lockdown asks if Kennard played a little point guard in college. By default, basically, he ran the point pretty frequently. He had the ball in his hands a lot, might as well have been the point guard by default at the very least. Did Kennard play center? No, he's a very small ball center. He's considerably undersized for the center position. You guys are getting a taste of the questions that are getting sent to me by piston-powered writers here. I think that was Matt Rollison. Stretch five, yeah, he's got some range. We'll say that. He would be the best shooting five in the NBA. Let's see, is Tolliver going to be the backup power forward? I think he's going to be probably a third string. I think that it'll be a battle for minutes between him and Reggie Bullock, switching between the three and the four. John Doe, with some numbers again, sorry I missed the numbers, asks how short John Lure's leash will be this year. And I think that it should be shorter than it was last year, certainly. Lure was, bad is maybe an overstatement, but not good for the majority of the final three and a half months of the season last year. He struggled, but the first couple months of the season were magnificent. He did everything the Pistons asked of him. He was perhaps one of the two or three best players on the team for the first 2 months of the season. That's more more an indictment of how poor, especially the starting lineup was at times early on, than it is really praise for him. You know, it's damning with faint praise, I guess, is the best expression, because when John Luehr is one of your best two or three players, it doesn't matter how good the hole is. That's just a bad thing. So, I'd say that that Luehr will have a shorter leash this year. He pretty much had carte blanche last year to do as he liked, play the minutes he'd liked. Set up shop after a screen like 19 feet from the basket, and like that would be how he would stretch the floor, and that's just not going to get it done. When your stretch four is like parking himself in the mid-range instead of just stepping back behind the line, it's not effective in any way, and I think that had a pretty significant impact on why the Pistons they did space the floor so poorly last year, especially in the starting lineups with Luehr on the floor. Well, I think that's going to be it for tonight. We'll be back at it tomorrow, Friday, July 14th. Once again, if you want to support the podcast, please do so by subscribing on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, whatever your podcast source of choice is. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. You can also support the podcast by utilizing our sponsor, SeatGeek. Yes, we have a sponsor. It is SeatGeek. If you don't know what SeatGeek is, it is a ticket aggregating app you can download to your phone, and you can use it to find the best deals for a given venue. The Pistons are going to be moving into Little Caesars Arena next year. Nobody's really sure how ticket prices or how ticket values are going to break down. SeatGeek can make it a lot easier for you to acquaint yourself with how value will be at a new arena like that. I have always used SeatGeek since I first heard about it on, I think, the Low Post podcast. Ever so long ago. So if you do want to use the SeatGeek app, don't you dare use it without first entering the coupon code LONBA, and that will save you $20 off your first purchase. And I'll let them know that you came from us, and everybody wins. So that'll be it for tonight. Thank you guys for listening. I always appreciate it, and that's it for now. Thank you. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.